Hello and welcome to Illy's Coffee Talks. Season 3 is going to be about all my favorite topics, including slow living, inner work, entrepreneurship, creativity, spirituality, slow traveling, and health. I am Ophélie Cabanero, your host. Enjoy the episode. Good afternoon, Pragati.
Good afternoon, Ophélie.
We're laughing because we were just making sure that we each pronounce each other's name properly. And we don't, no? Or I don't. You do. It's okay. And the reason...
But like I said, it's been pronounced wrong for the last 18 years, so it's no big deal.
Yeah. You are from India originally?
Yeah. Born and brought up in India.
And you moved to Basel 18 years ago then?
No. I moved to Basel 7 years ago. Okay. But since I've worked with Europeans and Americans for the last 18 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And been on calls with them and, you know, been collaborating and doing things, then it's been like the voice on the other side is always Pragati. And then there was a point, then I was like, okay, then I just stopped correcting people.
Yeah, it's that.
Pragati is good.
So, Pragati, you are the founder of My Swiss Story.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to share what it's all about?
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, My Swiss Story is super special because that's how I really met you as well. And that's why I want to talk a little bit about My Swiss Story. So My Swiss Story is on a very like a simple level is an expat blog that I mm-hmm. created when I moved to Switzerland 7 mm-hmm. years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of it was very simple. To be honest, the purpose for it for me was because I just love writing mm-hmm. and I needed a creative outlet,
mm-hmm.
You know, because everything was so new and I really wanted to document my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it all started. So I was just writing, you know, all my experiences. I was posting pictures because Switzerland is beautiful. Mm-hmm. You, I mean, even if you are not a photographer, you become one when you move to this country. So, yeah, I mean, that's what I was doing. I was just writing my experiences. And then I saw that a lot of people, expats especially, started to resonate with my content because I was creating content in English.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was touching some chords which were common, you know, that they were common threads that an expat really experiences when they reach, like, you know, they've just moved. And that's how this whole journey began. At this point in time, My Swiss Story has two main aspects. One aspect is that it still supports expats in their journey in Switzerland. That's still my focus area, despite so many years and, you know, so many changes that's happened, but that's the basic thread of My Swiss Story. And over the years, I also worked a lot with women.
Yeah.
So it's also become a platform where I try my best that women get the visibility that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Because women especially have such amazing stories, such diverse stories to tell. So it's kind of also become a platform where women feel that they are represented. And that's why I do a lot of work specifically with women who are, you know, who've created a new life in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. And so what did you think most expats went through when they first moved here? What were their concerns or struggles?
I mean, I can talk about myself. Like when mm-hmm. I moved from India, life completely changed. Like it's a complete 180 degree shift. Almost like you have to learn the ways of living again.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes to as basic as, you know, how things are done and, you know, how you really take care of the house, what it's like parenthood 2.0, motherhood 2.0, you know, taking care of your house 2.0, work 2.0. So it was like really like starting all over again. So that's, I feel the whole lifestyle that changes is a lot to take. Especially in the first year. Then I come from a warm country. So moving to Switzerland was like, I was like, what's what's happening and why are there seven different type of jackets and what are you guys really talking about? So that was really, really funny for me. I mean, it was like because we were all falling sick all the time and I did not know how to dress properly because like they say, right, there's no bad weather, just bad clothing. And I think it took me, I mean, it sounds very basic, but you know, having no help around, it was completely a DIY society. And I'm hey, like I cook dinner, I buy groceries, I clean this, and like there's no help and there's no help. So yeah, I mean everything changed, and the worst part is that you're doing all of this alone. Because in the beginning and even after some years, I feel that your social life really takes a back seat because you're learning so much, you're kind of adapting, and your unit becomes much smaller. It's with the family. So I moved here with my husband and my daughter, and that's, you know, that's what our life was centered around. So you do miss having, you know, family around, friends around, extended circles and things like that. So you're obviously very lonely. When you move. So I think these are some of the aspects that I think every expat goes through, especially in their year one.
Yeah, it's a big shift for sure. And the language.
And the language, absolutely. Which we still struggle with. At least I do.
Did you take German classes?
Yes, so I am actually even B1 certified now.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you very much. And but you know what happens? Like, I mean, I really enjoyed, so I'm not complaining at all. I really enjoy doing the classes and, you know, kind of practicing my German a little bit in grocery stores and in coffee shops and at this train station and things like that. But then it's so limited to that part because I work in a global environment and then everyone is always speaking English. So you hardly get a chance to practice as much. But yeah, I mean, I think I can understand quite a bit now, which is fair. And then I use my daughter as my translator because she's speaking very well.
She goes to a normal Swiss school.
She still goes to an international school. It's a bilingual school. So it's a little bit, this is also another tricky thing with the expats, because we when we moved here, we were like, okay, let's stay here for 3 years and then go back. That's going to be like our little adventure. It's been seven and we are still here. So I guess we really did like it. But, you know, in this whole mindset of, hey, what if we move? We kind of stuck with this international schools, which A, are probably not the best way to integrate, and B, are like super expensive. So our plan now is that as soon as possible, we move her to the local school. Because I think they are better in all ways, not just the aspect of what the fee structure looks like, but also for a child to integrate, it's always better if they go to the local school.
Yeah, I think you talk about that on your blog as well.
Yes, a lot about schools on, you know, about schools. And I mean, and I've documented a lot about how it was to raise a child in a culture which you yourself knew nothing about. So it's almost like, you know, I learned it with her and she learned it better because she went to school and I didn't.
And they're anyway so young and they learn fast and they can adapt very quickly.
Absolutely. And it's just a joy to watch them grow, and it's amazing how she's turned out to be when we moved 7 years back versus her personality right now. So it's, you can see how they adapt to the new culture and so fast with children, that they learn so much so fast.
It's amazing. What can we talk about? So that was when you
that's
got
the my Swiss story part. But I also wanted to say that my Swiss story is my passion project. It's more of like my creative outlet, what gives the bread and the butter at home is both me and my husband are actually working in the corporate environment. So I've been working in the corporate, you know, workforce for the last 18 years. That's why I was saying at the beginning I'm used to being called Prakati. because and just like, you know, this is such an Indian stereotype, but both of us work with tech. So I'm in technology for the last 17 or 18 years. I work with Accenture. I work as a business and integration senior manager. So it's pretty consuming, just not time, but you know, it kind of overall consumes you quite a bit. So that's like my main job, and I also teach as a lecturer, the same very geeky tech stuff at a university in Basel, which is the FHNW Basel University. And this is where I also did my master's when I had just moved to Switzerland. So it was very interesting to be you know, on the other side just a couple of years ago when I was one of the students in these classes, and then now me being a teacher. So it's really, and it's also something that I discovered after moving to Switzerland that I could teach. I had no idea that this is something that I would, because I never thought in my dreams that I would ever be a teacher. It just happened, and I absolutely love it. So
Yeah, that's
yes, my
nice.
life is pretty full. I'm doing quite a bit.
And it's great you share it because sometimes we can see, I mean, I knew you were doing this, but you don't try to hide it or anything. But sometimes maybe we see entrepreneurs and we see, oh, they have a blog, and maybe, oh, that's all they do. And then we get this fantasy in our heads. I know I've done that. And then I'm like, oh yeah, just blogging, how amazing. I mean, it can happen for sure, but what's your actually your take on that? What do you think about for people listening maybe and wanting to start a side project like that, have a creative outlet? What would you tell them, the newbies maybe?
Maybe. I mean, and that's, it's such an interesting question, because I feel that what we see on our phone, and we're spending so much time on our phones. I mean, I was recently reading this, and an average of it is around 4 to 5 hours a day that people are glued to their phones. They are actually looking at social media, and you know, very young impressionable minds are also doing the same thing and probably spending double the time that we are. And what we are seeing is all through, like I always say this, through these rose-tinted glasses. That's not life. You know, I don't put pictures of when I'm in front of my laptop 10 hours a day, and I really look like shit at these, sorry for the bad word, but I really look like really horrible at the end of the day, and I'm you know, so tired, and I'm like, why do I do this at all? And it's not the pretty picture. I don't want to put the bad pictures on Instagram. That's the part of life that's, I try my best to keep my content as real as possible. When I'm sick, I do tell people that, hey, this is what sick looks like. And, you know, this is what real life looks like. And when I'm not wearing makeup, this is what I look like. But what we are seeing most of the content that we're consuming is all really pretty pictures and the best locations. And it's not, and even the blogger life, right? The free products that they're getting all the time. And this is the reason I completely stopped doing that. You know, I stopped all PR packages that were coming to me, and I was like, because the truth of the matter is that I use maybe three or four products in my life. And I cannot, A, I don't have the bandwidth to try so much, and B, I don't want to fool an audience that's watching me. That, you know, I trying out everything in the world and recommending things. So I don't want to be in that position of power just because, you know, I become an influencer or a blogger. So I think this is what, I mean, people need to take it with a pinch of salt, that they are also just doing a job. Nobody's life is as glamorous, not even the biggest of stars, right? So even they have their hard moments and
That's
days when
true.
they're crying, the days that they just don't want to get out of bed. And it's the same. So anyone who wants to, it's just another job. There's a lot of hard work involved.
That's true.
If creating content is your passion, you want to take it full time, you want to make your, you know, side, like become like a sidepreneur on it, or you know, this is going to be like your passion project. It's serious business. There's a lot of work that goes. I mean, you need to know your why. Why do you really want to create content? What are you going to give that's not already available? you need to really think hard about that. And then the second point is that it's not all fancy. First of all, when we look at really big bloggers or influencers, they've really worked hard to reach wherever they have. And even behind all of that is so much work that goes in. Every reel that they shoot or every picture that they post and the edits that go in. No one is really living that sort of a dream that they're selling. So
yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, I always say that it's your writing or your content creation has to have a lot of purpose behind it. Only then would, you know, you attract the right people. It's not getting X number of followers or X number of views and likes, but it's about creating authentic content which attracts the right audience, not just any audience, but the right audience. And then secondly is like, you've got to take it as seriously as any other job in the world, sometimes even more, because it's much harder and you're all alone doing it.
Yeah, because it's, or what I felt is because it's so personal, because you really share things that you lived, or that you maybe when you go to work in the morning, you're kind of detached. And now the blog, for example, that you have, it's really your life. It's you. So very personal, very vulnerable.
Absolutely. And you're sharing a really vulnerable side to yourself, and it's always got a double edge, right? On one side, there will be people who are super supportive and who resonate a lot with what you write or what you post about or even your picture. But there's also this block of people who will judge you for what you post, or who would, like we also call that, there are these trolls in the market, or they are spammers, like, you know, remember what happened to me when we were doing the Advent giveaway together.
Yeah.
So it was, there have been points, and this is a really raw thing, that there have been points even in my content creation journey when I have thought about, let's just shut all this, because this is too much of my personal life, this is too much of a personal invasion sometimes. And yeah, fine, I love writing and other things, but it's, this is becoming too much. So it's it does not come with its own pressures and, you know, moments which, where you feel, hey, it's not really worth it. But yeah, I mean, there are obviously very, very rewarding moments that keep you going. But, you know, there's also this flip side to everything that you do. And being vulnerable is actually the strongest choice a woman or anybody who's posting content kind of makes when they do it. Not everyone can be vulnerable on a public platform.
Yeah. Did you think it would go so big when you started? Did you have it, or did you have a vision for that?
I was a little bit lucky because I had my sister guiding me, and she was a beauty editor with a large company at that time in India. She was already a very established blogger. And when I was moving, I was a little bit upset. So there's a backstory to it. When I was moving to Switzerland, what people think is when we move to Switzerland is like, oh yes, you know, you made it in life and you're moving to this amazing country. All that was great, but I was really doing very well in my career at that point in time, almost about to get promoted. I was working in a large FMCG corporation at that time. And then I was like, telling my husband, do we really want to do this? Because I think I'm very well established where I am, and it's, and I will have to quit and just come with you and be the trailing spouse. And so it wasn't an easy decision when we moved. And my sister, obviously, I'm the closest to her, like, you know, so I was, she obviously knew what I was going through. And when I was going through it, going through this whole transition, she told me, hey, why don't you start writing for, and that's why my address is Pragati at beforbeauty.com, because Be for Beauty was her blog. And what, how it all happened was, she gave me like a small section on the blog, and she said, we'll call it the Swiss blog. And then you write your stories here. And so it was her. So I was very lucky to get my small corner in a very established blog.
Amazing.
And then there was a point in time when this section became bigger than Be for Beauty, which was more of a beauty and a skincare and a lifestyle sort of a blog. And she was like, it's time for you to leave and open your own shop now. And I was like, yeah. And I was still kind of like, let's be like, no. Because now the content does not match at all. And I cannot do beauty and she cannot, she does not live here. So we have to like, so that's how my Swiss story was born. So I was writing from 2016 to the almost till the end of 2019 on Defocus. And then we decided it was a collective call that, we will start myswissstory.com. And then it was in a, it, my mind, it's still the same. It's exactly the same thing that I do, but it was important that we have these two blogs. And then her audience, the audience that was kind of that I built over there, I was so lucky that they followed. Also, like these guys were on my Swiss story again, and I did not have such a big problem with then again rebuilding the whole website and things like building an audience again. So I think I was a little bit more fortunate than someone who just starts a new blog because I had like the right person who was in the industry who was telling me, hey, this is what you need to do. And she would actually sometimes even edit my articles and things like that. So I had some help there.
That's
And I'm
great.
really thankful. Yeah, I'm very thankful that she did that. She still works in the content creation business, so that's like her main job. She's working with a lot of, like, she does a lot of brand building and stuff. So yeah, I was set up in the right way.
Nice. You learned from the best.
Yes, for me she is for sure. She also helped a lot in this in the campaign that we did together, the Advent campaign. So she was, I whenever I am in trouble, I go back to her and I say, hey, you need to help me with
That's
this.
so sweet.
I'm lucky that way.
Yes. So you started, basically you got to Switzerland and you didn't have a
Yeah.
job at first, you because you quit your job in India
Yes. Yes.
and then you came and you started that blog here.
I
And
started blogging and I also had the master's that I had already. So I always have a lot of planning that goes into what will I be doing. So I do, I've always heard that women don't prioritize themselves and sometimes put their families ahead of themselves. For me, my family is super important. I mean, it's just the three of us and it's like they are pretty much, my life. But I always also take care of what will I be doing because I can easily not feel healthy if I am not like if I'm not if I don't feel like I'm adding enough value, or my creativity is being utilized. I was really worried about that because I was leaving my job for the first time in my life, to kind of go to a place that I had never been before. It was pretty scary, right? It looks like a bed of roses, but it's not. So that's why, and I had decided that, hey, it's been on my bucket list that I want to do a master's, but because I started working, and it was so many years of working that I was, you get financially independent, and there's never a right time to come out of your job and start doing an MBA or a master's. So over here, when I moved, I was like, there's never going to be another time like that. So I did my master's.
Great. So you were doing those two things, and that
Yes.
was manageable to do it together.
It was still a lot, yeah. I think I did again sign up for a lot. This is a running theme in my life that I always take up a lot of things.
Yeah,
And
we
this is
all
one of
tend
the things.
to, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm trying to work on that. But yeah, it was pretty nice because initially it's also setting up your family because obviously my husband was already in this job and this new role for which we moved here. And then there was a 5-year-old who's now 12, but she was 5 then. And there was all of this, like I was saying, life 2.0 happening. So it was this plus the master's plus, this whole blogging journey that started, which was actually very therapeutic for me. This is the only reason I started writing and, all of this started was because this was almost therapy for me. So it was the only thing that I was doing only for myself. And there was nothing else in my mind.
I'll come back to the how you juggled everything, but when did you start writing? For yourself
Yeah,
or for
for myself, yeah, I think luckily come from a family of writers, I would say, because my dad is really very, very well read. So this was a like a running theme in our house that we that are like what do you say, like playtime would also have some writing involved in it. So I was writing very early on in life. Like it was something that my dad was always inculcating for me and my sister, that you guys have to read a lot of books and write a lot. So we were writing like I don't even when I started writing, because I was always writing a lot. I was writing short stories from really when I was a child. And I did the same thing with my daughter. So she loves to read and write, which I think is the most powerful thing that you can give to a child, because that's the whole imagination that they can then kind of work with. And then you really build a world around it and create characters, and it's just beautiful. That's when I had started writing, was as long as then. And I was also even blogging before I moved to Switzerland, but this blog was being read by four or five people, which is like my mom, dad, sister, husband. So yeah, no one cared. That's why I said that my writing only found some purpose. So basically found a little bit more audience than four people, and I moved here.
What was it about back then?
So yeah, like I was saying, I was writing a lot of fiction at that time. I mean, I would always create these stories and characters. It wasn't so much about life and
And you
things
would
like
publish those or post those on your blog.
that. Some of it, yes. So that's how I, and this was another thing that happened to me, because I was writing all of these stories and things like that, was because I wrote a character and built a character called Maya, and then I just kept writing chapters about it till it became like almost like a play. And then I decided I'm going to produce it. And then I actually staged that play in India.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. So
So
you actually have both creative, like the writing side of the brain and the technology, more scientific or not right? Or
I would say like I'm my heart resonates more towards creativity, but I think I'm also very good at, I wouldn't have lasted in a job for this long. So I mean, I always loved numbers. I was always good at math, and then computers, when computers, like when I got my first I think it was a compact Presario, when it's the first computer that we got at home, I had stars in my eyes and things like that. I think I was in grade, I think the 10th grade or something. And so I've also always been fascinated with technology. It wasn't that, but I don't find myself putting all my creativity into it. I always feel incomplete. And that's why I've always, kind of resonated towards the arts, whether it was, doing that play or trying my hand at acting or writing or taking pictures or creating content and everything. It's something that I always found missing. It was like that missing piece. So that's why I've always done an extra project outside of my regular job.
Amazing to have both. I don't have both. I'm not sure I even have one of them really
No, come
properly.
on. I don't believe you.
No, but definitely was more drawn towards literature and languages when I was younger. And I would never do math or something like that, accounting, all these things. It's tricky
Yeah,
for
my
me.
sister would completely. She's with you on that. She was like, as soon as possible, I can get rid of these numbers in my life. I'm just gonna leave math and go away. And I was the one who was like, oh, I love this and I love this. I love how we come to these solutions and things like that. So I did kind of, so I'm geeky in that sense, that I did love numbers enough to, continue or make a career in this whole science and technology realm.
It's great. So then you were doing your master's and writing for the blog, or first your sister's and then yours, and then you took on that job at university. Is that right?
No. So after I finished, there's a lot that happened. So after I finished my master's, my supervisor, who first did not like me much because she was like, she just cannot do research work because she comes from this country where they never did research work. And that's true. She's not wrong. The way we study in India is like we never write papers. It's not a thing for us. We do projects and we do a lot of talks and we go and present, and it's more around kind of either academic, that means you're going and writing exams, or you are working on a project. But this whole research paper thing is such a European thing, I would say. It was like something that was so new for me. So when I intermediate had submitted my first 3 or 4 chapters of my master's, she was like, "This one's gonna fail." And it's not easy for someone who's, say, worked at least 13 years in the industry. So I think I was the most senior in my class, and I was like, what's going on? And then I completely turned it around because I was like, hey, this is now going to be a big challenge for me, but I'm going to learn how to do this. And I did. And I was probably rated one of the highest in my final thesis that I submitted. And then it turned so much that she said that, hey, stay with us and do a PhD. Take this thing forward. Take this journey forward because you've already done so much work on what you were working on. And then I was like, no, I think I want to go back to my corporate life now. It's time to make some money, I'm being totally honest. So that's when I started applying. I was also applying all through my master's. This is another thing that is a very expat facet of life, that you might have done years and years in your home country. You have come here with a lot of experience. But for some reason, it's hard to find a job in Switzerland. You might be very skilled, you might be super talented, and a lot of things. Of course, the language is always a barrier, but there are a lot of things that play a part. Just, learning the ropes around finding a job in Switzerland is not the easiest aspect. You really have to work on it almost like a project. So, yeah, I think, I'm sure. And every expat kind of resonates with that, that finding a job here is almost like finding
Because
gold.
they ask also for very specific diplomas and certifications, and it has to be exactly that. And the language also is often a barrier.
Yeah, there are a lot of aspects, and I think I did a lot of. I could write a book now on all the things I did, and I actually did share a lot later on of how I found the job in Switzerland. But yeah, my first job was happened, I think, almost a month after I finished university. So I was lucky in that sense that at least I did not have to wait. I started working with IBM at that point in time. Was a very difficult setup, but I said yes to it because I was spending 3 days in Vevey, which is on the French side of Switzerland, and then I would suspend the rest of the week, which was 4 days, and my child was still maybe six and a half, 7, and it was really, really tough on our family. But I was like, hey, I have to get the foot, kind of get the foot in the door and start working again. And it was really hard. Like I had so we had two apartments at that point in time. I took a studio, living there for a while, and then after a year or so, I think year and a half, I was like, this is really, really
Too
too
much.
much. It is really too much. It's also affecting my health a lot because I always used to feel like I'm in the train all the time. But I learned a lot about living in Switzerland and kind of working in Switzerland. This was a very, really, really, it was a difficult year, but it was one of the years where I learned so much because I started working and then I was traveling all the time. it was almost like I was in between two countries because the German part is speaking German, the French part is speaking French, and no one cares about your English. And you have more complexities at work because you're like, the Swiss ways of working are a little bit different, even though it was quite global. And then, yeah, so after that, after the whole, then I was working in Bern for some time. That was still absolutely fine because you can still do that within a day. You can still stay home for all of this. And then I moved to Accenture. Yeah, it was a great position again, a great role. So my home office was Basel, but that's another story that I've never been able to find a project in Basel. I'm somehow always at least 1 hour away from home. So Zurich, Zug, all of these other places are where I find my clients because I work in consulting. But yeah, I mean, and this whole teaching thing happened, I think, 2019 end. The same teacher called me up and she said, hey, I really think you should teach. So we kept in touch all through these years when I was working. I used to tell her, this is how stuff is going. This is how, you know, it's shaping up. And she was like, I'm telling you, you're going to do your PhD someday. And then when she called me up, one of the days when she called me up, I was like, yes, I would love to have a coffee together, but I'm not going to do a PhD. And she was like, no, 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 I have something else this time. And the subject was very close to what I work on. So it was enterprise systems and I am working with that all the time. So I was like, yeah, but do you think I can teach? Because how do you know if I can even do this? And she was, somehow she put her faith in me. And I still thank her for this because it was one of the most rewarding journeys. And it was something that I just discovered, say, at the age of 39. Now I've been teaching for 3 years, 38, 39. And, you know, discovering your passion at that age is just amazing because you didn't know you could do it, do that. And I did my first class and I was like, hey, I love this. I love this whole thing of giving back and, you know, interacting with students. And then, you know, like I could see light bulbs going up. And if you can make some sort of a difference or change the thinking about how career could go in a different direction. So it's really was, that's how teaching really happened, completely by accident.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So it's all your relationships and, you know, it's relationships really matter. And sometimes people really do put so much faith in you. And these are not people that I knew, right? These are these are relationships that I just built after moving here. It's not like I'm, and it's also the impression changing that happened in this particular case because I had never written a research paper in my life.
But yeah, it's a great journey. And so now you still teach and you still work in the corporate world then?
Yes, I was doing all of this and it was just becoming a lot. So I was working 100% and I was teaching. Autumn semesters is when I teach. And I also do the blog and I do this pretty seriously. And I do these creative projects when I'm responsible even for other people, which becomes then your accountability is so much higher because you're working with so many people and they expect stuff out of you. Even if it's not monetized, which it isn't for most of the times, but it's still a responsibility, right? I mean, whatever work you put in. So it was just becoming a lot. So recently I've now become, you know, I think a couple of months back, I decided that I want to become part-time with my job because I'm doing quite a bit. So that's one of the things I did to take care of myself. That I was like, hey, I need to add some balance.
That's good.
Into my life, yeah.
So now you feel that it's more, that it's pretty balanced with those three outlets?
It's still sometimes a lot. Because, you know, in consulting, when you say 60%, then it's 100%.
Yeah.
When you say 100%, it's 200%. But I mean, I try. And I think some of the things that I've learned in the last couple of months is that it's okay to say no. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to draw your boundaries. And sometimes people really appreciate you when you kind of raise your hand and say that this is really too much for me. Even your family, even your closest people, when you tell them that, hey, I need help. I need you to support me here. Or I did not know this was ever an option till I started using this as an option and saying that, hey, I cannot do everything by myself. So I ask for help when I need help, at least from the people that I can trust and the ones that are close to me. I say no when I know that there's no way out, rather than feeling bad later or taking a chance with my health. I'd rather say no at the right time. And saying no is one thing, but saying no at the right time is so important.
How do you know that it's the right time now to say no, or how so you can take a personal example if you want, like how do it's sometimes tricky, especially for people who tend to take too much or who like to do different things at kind of the same time. How can we know better before it gets out of control?
I mean, I think for me, I've really learned it the hard way. I had no idea that I wanted to say no. To be honest, emotionally, I think I never realized it till there was a point in time in my life, I think it was the end of 2021, when I needed to lie down every 1 or 2 hours because my body would be in so much pain. And I was just working nonstop. And I think it was I was I just did not understand what's going on, but I was even then very, hunky dory, happy, still being myself, total people pleaser that I am, I was doing everything, but I was like physically super unhappy because every 1 or 2 hours, imagine that really also takes an effect on your mental health because you are not feeling good. You were just not feeling good. And I was like not able to sit on this chair anymore and things like that. And then I was like, something's not right. Of course, there was medical intervention needed until I realized that I might be going through an actual burnout. And that was like a big alarm bell for me. Hey, I need to take care of myself. Because if I don't, then all of those people who I'm taking care of, it's not going to make sense anymore then. And yeah, I think this was a big eye opener for me. I took a back seat. I took a break for some time. I practiced a lot of different techniques and saw what would really work for me, right? Because all of us are so different. It's easy to say that follow a morning routine, do yoga, do meditation, eat well, go to the gym. There are 20,000 things that you can do. And go to a therapist and do acupuncture, and I've been but I also had to do a lot of things to realize what is it that really works for me, what is it that brings me happiness, what is it that brings me peace, what is it that restores my balance. This was the most important for me. And I think the first step was when there was awareness, when there was actual awareness that, hey, I do need to take care of myself, because even that was missing, right, for the longest period. And we are wired so differently, at least in my culture, that we always just keep doing things, doing and caring for others, and, putting yourself not second or third also at times, but probably last. And that's when I was like, no, but I need to really put myself in the center. And I tried a lot of things. And then, there were things that I had to change about what makes me feel good. Like, I would ask myself that question. I would stop and ask myself that question. What's making me feel good? What's making me feel in, kind of, what's my morning routine going to look like? And it's going to be only my morning routine. I don't care about if people drink 20 glasses of water and then they take 20 breaths and then they. It's not for everyone, it's now, even this has become a social media trend.
know.
So yeah, I think I found my own. There was a lot of awareness first that happened, and there was a lot of time spent with family friends that understand. And then I think I tried various things which brought me back my balance. And of course, it was when I went back to work, I also had a lot of conversations with people. I was very open with people that, this is what works for me. This just does not work for me anymore. And I'm very lucky that my organization was very supportive at this point in time. That my family was very supportive and that people around me understood. Because sometimes you could be, this could be very underestimated. Somehow, I don't think mental health conversations are still where they should have been. We're not taking them as seriously as
Physical
people.
problems.
Yes, like it's still not normalized, but at least there's a conversation that's going on. So I'm glad at least that's happening.
Did you read the book, or did you hear about Gabor Mate and the body, When the Body Says No?
I haven't.
It's basic. So he's a medical doctor, and he really started to see people in his practice, but also, like, instead of just being a medical doctor and giving people a pill, he would do, really have a conversation with those people and try to figure out why they would maybe have this disease or this mental health thing, or and often it came from trauma, but also as many things. But he says when you don't say no yourself, your body will, basically. So this,
Yes.
there's a lot of people pleasing. I mean, we all do it, because that's what we learned as kids. And putting, I mean, Christine Gerberud, she might listen to that. And she gave a workshop actually about setting boundaries and saying no. And I went because I need to learn it too.
Yeah.
And it's great, yeah, to learn to put yourself first and to not feel guilty when you say no to something, and to be, yeah, to really say it and without excuse, without justifying yourself, you know, to be like, hey, this is not gonna work for me, in a polite way still, of course. But
Yeah.
it's so valuable because it's gonna give you so much time for you.
It's almost like it gives you the you feel so free. It's a very freeing. It's difficult, of course. It's very difficult because if you've been wired for years and years and most of your youth, and then at whatever age we are at now, becoming mothers and things like that. I mean, if you're wired in a particular way and you've never said no, or it's not normal for you to say no, it's almost like you learn this. You learn this, and then you then to apply. One is to just say it, and then is to apply it. And when you apply it, and after you do it, you also see the reaction of how supportive people in front of you can be. It could go either way, of course. There's always they're all there's always going to be people who are never going to understand you, or you stay misunderstood, or it stays underestimated. But then there are it's a mix of reactions. But when you do this, how you feel, at least the way I feel, is that it's very, very freeing. It's everyone should try it.
Yes, definitely. And it's going to be hard at the beginning, and it's
Yeah.
normal. But yeah, it's very, I forgot what I wanted to say now about that topic. I forgot. It's okay.
Yeah, happens. Happens a lot to me as well.
Yeah, we often think that we often think, oh, I cannot say that to that person. Whatever it is, doesn't have to be no or set a boundary or something, but maybe we changed our mind. Or yeah, a lot of, I notice people around me also are like, oh, but I'm never gonna be able to tell her that or him because he's never gonna be able to understand. Well, often we think that, but it's not true at all. Because when we actually have that conversation, the other person is totally fine with it. Mostly they don't care, because the drama you play, it's just in your head and it's not real.
And I don't know, I think this is our this is the thing with overthinkers, that we have played out the entire story, the whole situation in our mind, and given ourselves the worst scenarios possible, that then we are kind of hesitant to even start that conversation. And it's so funny when you actually do it and you were like, oh, it was that simple, huh?
It was that simple, and also it's probably gonna serve both to have that conversation, because if you feel like something's not quite right, then it's not gonna be right for the other person either. At some point, that person's gonna feel that, I'm guessing. And then if you say, for example, you want to quit your job and you're not gonna do an amazing job day after day after day because you actually don't want to be there. And maybe if you tell your boss you want to quit, he might find an amazing person to replace you who actually wants to be there. So it's a win-win-win situation. Yeah, for
Totally agree.
example.
Totally agree. Absolutely.
So yeah, I also encourage people to say no and set boundaries.
And I know it's very easy when you preach it, so hard to follow it, because I think like me, you have done it too, and it's not the easiest thing to do, especially for people pleasers, but so powerful, because it's almost like you have this feeling of empowerment when you are able to, stand up for yourself more and put those boundaries in and say that it's okay to not be okay.
It's yeah, also for sure. Thanks for sharing that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if any of our listeners would benefit from it or are on the edge, they should know that it happens. It's quite normal that, happens to the best of the people, and
We
you
cannot.
really don't know what's behind the pretty Instagram picture you're talking about.
Yeah, and we cannot do the. So here we have seasons, and you probably notice that in the winter, for example, you're more tired, you need more sleep. So you cannot do all the things you do all year round. If it's winter, for example, or maybe if you're a woman listening, if you have your period, or because we work in cycles, so we cannot be doing all the time on all levels. Like maybe there's a time where you work more on one project and then more on the other, and
Yeah, I mean, though, your whole energy, your whole balance is so different throughout the year. I mean, I had no idea, so I would always be very hard on myself. This has not been a good day. But it's okay, because you probably were very hormonal today. Or, there was something else that was going on, and it's fine. Your energy was kind of low. You have not rested enough. And I think those are more important things to, kind of be more kind to yourself. Know how you're feeling, really.
And did you find that in India you were more you could, because the seasons are probably not that extreme there, what could you, did you see the impact in your work or in the energy you had?
I could still see it. It was just that I had no awareness because I would just. Like I was very focused, and I was work would always take a lot of would consume me quite a bit, I would say. But there was definitely, the ups and downs just in the way the days go. There's some days that there's a lot of energy and that you're able to accomplish a lot. I never could have related to seasons or, other things or our cycles or different things that goes on around. I don't think I could do it. That's also something that I think I've recently learned. I was never wired the way that way where I would be slightly more kinder to myself, I would say. But yeah, I mean, I was always in India. One of the good or convenient things is that you do have help around, even if you don't have like your support system in terms of, you know, having your parents around or having your in-laws around, things like that. Because in India, when you are far apart in different cities, you are really far apart. It's almost like a 3 hour flight to get to where your parents stay. Still better than now, 9 hours or 10 hours, but still, it wasn't the easiest. But this whole concept of that you can hire help, affordable help in India is much widely and vastly accepted. So when I moved here, it was a running joke, and my friends would ask me at the university that how rich were you? And I was like, no, I'm not being snobbish here. It's just the way life is over there. It's a people with so many, you know, it's a country with so many people. It's a very large population. There's a lot of jobs, and it's very normal that if you're middle class and above, you will have some sort of help. And this helps really enables you to delegate some of your, you know, the running or the operational sort of tasks in your life, especially when your babies are babies. And you know, that's the time I think mothers need a lot of help. So yeah, I mean, mothering is anyway hard, but I remember that I was back at my desk because I had complications during my pregnancy. I was back on my desk still the moment my daughter was 3 months old, which is not so possible. If I was here, I would think, because I had enough help to, you know, manage the fort when I would leave home.
I mean, I hear here from a lot of my friends who have small children now, and how hard it is because, probably parents are not around, and then it's super expensive to put the kids in at the kita and or hire a babysitter, so not everybody can do it, and it
And a lot of women
sounds.
are, mostly women. I wouldn't want to make this a sexual stereotype, but I see a lot of women kind of taking a back seat when they are new mothers, which is absolutely fine. But somehow I think the society has to be a little more friendlier towards this whole option of allowing daycare or, you know, these kitas to support moms a little bit more who. I mean, it's absolutely fine if you voluntarily want to take a break and take care of your child. It's, I think, the most precious time, right? So it's like no mother wants to really miss it. But for what I've noticed is that sometimes you don't have an option at all. Then that's not the best arrangement also.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. You kind of should have the freedom.
Is there anything you'd like to share about your journey or entrepreneurship or anything as an expat?
Yeah,
Anything?
I think as an expat, I would probably share one from each of the different things that you just asked me about. So I'll start with being an expat. So if you're a new expat and you've moved to any country in the world, not just to Switzerland, but I think having an open mind is super important, putting yourself out there. So you really, and it's not easy to go out of your comfort zone, especially if you are a person who is kind of an introvert or kind of between an introvert and an extrovert, but you really need to put yourself out there to, because it's the sense of community is extremely important for your health, both physical and mental. So I think do yourself that favor and make sure that you put yourself out there so that you can thrive, not just enjoy, but just thrive in your expat life. This is something that I have learned in the last 7 years. Then on the journey of entrepreneurship, I would still say that I am learning because I am like a side entrepreneur, like you would say it, but really have a purpose. Like it has to come from within. This has to be really something that you are very passionate about. Don't do anything for the sake of it. Whether it's starting a new coaching business, whether it's starting, you know, a cooking class, baking classes, or it's starting a blog or even just an Instagram account. Be purpose driven over there. And then lastly was from my journey. I think the last 7 years has been quite, because we spoke a lot about the last 7 years. So the last 7 years have been such a roller coaster for me. I've learned, I think, I was telling recently one of my friends is I think I've lived much more than just 7 years in the last 7 years. It's probably been the kind of learnings that I've had, the kind of experience that that I've had is it's I'm very grateful for all of that. So, kind of savor all of the things that happen to you, even the bad ones, because the bad ones teach you so many things so that you can apply all of those lessons. Yeah, and say no. We talked about that a lot. So say no.
That's great. Thank you so much. It was a
Thank
really
you.
nice conversation, and I'm super grateful for that conversation with you today.
Likewise, Ophelia, it was such a pleasure. I
Nice.
had such a great time. And
Me
I'm
too.
glad that we did it just spontaneously. And there's
Yeah.
guys, we haven't prepared at all. It was really like two friends sitting over coffee and talking.
It's the best.
Yeah.
And maybe you have, speaking of coffee, those coffee with purpose
Yes.
days. Is there one
Yeah.
coming up?
So we just had an event yesterday in Marseille in a yoga studio, and this was the first time I did an event, like an event. It was pretty nice, but we keep doing that. So if you log on to my website or follow me on Instagram. Actually, follow me on Instagram is the best way. And this year is all about, for me, the focus or the goal or the vision with my Swiss story this year is really to build a very supportive community of women who, there's a lot of value in it. And I really think that's going to be my mission for this year. It's not to write a lot or to focus on creating expat content. Of course, that's going to go on. That's like a personal passion, so that's going to go on. But the whole community building aspect is like very, very, very important. So yeah, if you follow me on Instagram, then you'll know when the next coffee meet is or when the next webinar is or when the next event is going to be.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you very much, and thank you all for
Thank you so
listening.
much.